Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
No. Okay, again, we will start with a short motivation practice. Try to sit in the right posture, keeping your back straight if possible. It helps to be more alert, awake. But at the same time, try to relax, but not to be too uptight. And feel your body, feel the weight of your body on cushion, chair. And as you inhale and exhale naturally, observe the inhale and exhale mindfully. Being aware of what you observe as you inhale and exhale. In that way, we try to keep our mind, our attentions in the moment present with the breath. If you find your mind wandering off, recognize, be aware of that, and you can always bring back your mind attention to the breath. Once your mind has been settled and quiet, then we can try to reflect, contemplate, and feel how fortunate and lucky that we are to have this precious human life. It might not be perfect. Still, there is a lot of challenges and struggles in our life. But this human life has incredible potential. If we can tap on the potential, not only we can achieve fully our temporary happiness, we have the potential to achieve happiness of liberation, happiness of fully awakened state. And potential is not only achieve our own happiness, but to be able to bring happiness, help to bring happiness in others' life. Full of incredible potentials. Not only there's so much potentials, but we have all the conducive conditions to tap into those potential with this life, this precious life, this precious human life. Free from the major obstacle to practice the Dharma, to actualize their potentials. And have gathered main conducive conditions to practice the Dharma. In order to actualize that potential. Not all sentient beings have such conducive conditions. Not even all the human beings have such incredible conditions. With that understanding, try to feel how fortunate and grateful that we are is rare and not easy. to have precious human life with such conditions. Even though this precious human life has so much potential with all the right conditions, supporting conditions, but this life does not last forever. For sure, it will come to end one day. Just as everyone who has come in the world before us have passed away. We will also have to face that reality. Of death one day. Within the 100 years, none of us will be here in this world. Try to feel that for sure that we will be facing death. Not only the death is certain, when it will happen is so uncertain. It could come in 50 years, within the 50 years, within 20 years, within 10 years, or maybe within this year, or even maybe this month, this week. Even today, we never know. All our family members, friends, colleagues, others who have passed away. Almost most of them didn't know, expected to die that particular day. No, the family were left behind. They didn't know that they were going to die that day, that time. But suddenly, things change, conditions change, and they pass away. Same way, we could encounter death anytime, any moment. Things could change anytime. Being young is no guarantee. that will outlive those who are older. Being healthy is no guarantee that we will outlive those who are not healthy. Being powerful and having resources is not guaranteed that we will outlive those who are more weak and doesn't have resources or less resources. Therefore, we never know when it's going to come. And it could come any time, any moment. So try to feel, you know, that death is not only going to come one day, but it could come any time. And what helps at the time of death and after the death is only our Dharma practice. Nothing else can help us at the time of death and after the death. Therefore, I should try to focus, give more time on Dharma practice. And since we do not know when the death could come, we should not postpone, thinking there will be time to practice in the future. Instead, try to practice right now as much as possible. Without postponing. Generate strong resolutions. Should do the practice as much as we can now instead of waiting to do in the future. In other words, we need to practice Dharma, we need to practice the Bodhisattva practices. In order to liberate all sentient beings in one sense from all the suffering and cause of suffering. And in order to lead them to ultimate happiness or fully awakened state. In order to help all sentient beings to free from all the suffering and cause of suffering and to achieve ultimate happiness. And must achieve fully awakened state myself first. Buddha generates strong aspiration, wish to achieve fully awakened state, so that we can be greatest help benefit to all sentient beings, to liberate from their suffering. And in order to achieve that fully awakened state, I must engage in the bodhisattva practices such as 6 perfection, 10 perfections, by generating loving kindness, compassion, bodhicitta, and the wisdom. And to actualize those practice and qualities. I must contemplate, meditate, and practice correctly, continuously. And for that, I must be reminded of those practices. And therefore, I'm going to listen to the talk and engage in discussion, reflection, contemplations. Okay. So then we do the refuge and bodhicitta. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merit I created, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Sangye Chodam Sokye Chonam La Chancho Padu Dhani Kasu Chit Tāgī śrīṣe dīpe sonam ki Nūlā pēṣe sāṅgye dūpāśo Sāṅgye chūtāṅ sōkī chūnāṅ lā Sāṅchū pātū tāmi kāsūcī Tāgī śrīṣe dīpe sonam ki Nūlā pēṣe sāṅgye dūpāśo. Again, welcome back everyone today. So let me just kind of summarize a little bit what we talk about yesterday, or what we discussed yesterday under this particular sutra. Mainly, we talk about from the sutra that Buddha's instructions for those who are interested in the bodhisattva path, you know, to engage in cultivating the loving kindness, compassion. On the base, based on that loving kindness and compassion, that cultivate this altruistic attitude of the awakening mind, the bodhicitta mind. The mind in which to achieve your highest state, your most perfect and complete state, the fully awakened state, so that you can be able to help benefit other sentient beings to free from their suffering and cause of sufferings, and to be able to help them to achieve the ultimate happiness. So you start to cultivate such attitude, such mind. And while you develop such bodhicitta attitude, at the same time, you should train. He advised that we should train to see the emptiness of the sentient beings, emptiness of the sentient beings that you are going to help to liberate, and the emptiness of the enlightenment to whom you want to achieve, and emptiness of yourself who want to help to liberate sentient beings and to achieve that fully awakened state. Also, when we are able to meditate on emptiness of the sentient beings who are suffering, it also helps not to be overwhelmed by the pain and sufferings. Sometimes when we think of others' pain and sufferings, because the pain and suffering is such intense and so much, sometimes one can be overwhelmed by them. A lot of people get overwhelmed by them when they are dealing with so much pain, suffering around them, in their family, in their job, different circumstances, different situations, because those pain and suffering are so, they feel so real, so painful, so real, and so they become too overwhelmed by that. And being overwhelmed by those suffering and pain, sometimes it can make us frozen, you know? And that is the way for us to protect ourselves from being too overwhelmed. Sometimes we become frozen, sometimes we kind of block ourselves, build a kind of wall so that we don't feel the pain. And then we become like, what can become like, you know, like a robot, no feeling. And so such things can happen because the sufferings are so intense and so many and you feel so real about that. So when you meditate on emptiness of those suffering sentient beings, you know, then you see, while you feel their pain and that, at the same time you feel less real of that, not as concrete and as real as you feel at the moment. And when you feel less concrete and less real, then it helps to be less overwhelmed by the sufferings. So one will not be overwhelmed by the pain and sufferings. And so also that is also one, it helps when you bring that wisdom part of the meditation into that. It can also help to not be overwhelmed and then burn down, burn out, not burn down. That seems a little bit scary. Yeah, a lot of time we become overwhelmed by those pain, and then we feel burned out by them. And so again, having that understanding, realization of the emptiness of the sentient beings, that those suffering sentient beings can be helpful, will help, you know, and therefore, we should train to see the sentient, the suffering sentient beings as being empty, empty of inherent existence or real, truly existence. And then once you have cultivated that bodhicitta mind that is being supported by the wisdom, realizing the emptiness, then again, one should train the advice, one should train in the path, both of the path, such as the practice of 6-10 paramitas, such as the practice of generosity and so forth. Mm. And by engaging those practices, such as the generosity, the paramita, generosity, moral discipline, and so forth, we are able to, while we are on the path, we are able to help sentient beings. Not only we cultivate loving kindness, compassion, bodhicitta mind, but also out of that loving kindness, compassion, bodhicitta mind, then is a way of helping and benefiting through the practice of generosity, moral discipline, and all others. So we try to be help, benefit in actions as much as possible through those practices. While we try to bring help, or while we try to be helpful or beneficial to sentient beings in that way, at the same time, it helps us to be more enlightened, more awakening, you know, more and more awakening, more and more enlightened, and we grow and getting closer and closer to the ultimate goal to achieve that fully awakened state, so that we can be not only help, benefit, but to be able to be help, benefit limitlessly to all sentient beings. And so, and then while we practice, while we train in practice such as generosity, again, you know, we try to practice generosity by seeing the emptiness of the act of the practice, the act of practice of generosity itself, to the being that you are practicing generosity and the object of generosity, by seeing all of them empty. And by seeing all of them in the emptiness of that, again, when you practice, you are able to practice generosity much more powerful without any sense of miserliness, clinging, grasping. As we say, without any expectations, you know, we are able to practice purely. And then, having engaged into the such practice as 6 or 10 paramita, then, you know, one achieve the fully awakened state, you know, the result. One achieve the fully awakened, the result of, you know, we with two bodies, the Dhammakaya and Rupakaya, enlightened beings' bodies. Again, while one aspires to achieve such awakening, enlightened state of Dharmakaya and Rupakaya, again, you know, advice is one should practice, train by seeing even the Dharmakaya, Rupakaya is empty. You know, even the resolve is empty. The path itself, such as the six perfections, is empty. Even the result through such practice is also empty, by seeing them empty. Thereby, when you see empty, you don't get attached to the path, you don't get attached to the result. So letting go, being attached to yourself, attached to the path itself, attachment to the result of the path itself. So in that way, there's no more attachments, clinging, grasping to any objects, anything. Otherwise, we let go of attachment to ourselves, grasping to ourselves, then we find another object to cling on, grasp on. The path becomes the object of grasping, clinging. And if the path is not the object clinging and grasping, then the result, which we feel that the ultimate result, becomes the object of clinging and grasping. And as long as we are clinging and grasping, then you are still in bondage. You are still not free. The only way to free ourselves completely is to free from all this grasping and clinging to any objects. And so then yesterday we spoke about what it means by emptiness, you know, and we spoke a little bit about that, you know, because that will come all throughout the sutta, you know, and once we learn to interpret or understand with one, then you can apply same, all other same, you know, it would be easier. Okay, so that is a little bit of the kind of summary from the yesterday. And I think we're on page number 6. The second paragraph. So the next one is, you know, so Buddha having explained, you know, that by engaging in the practice as such as 6 and 10 paramita, that one will achieve fully awakened state of Dhammakaya and Rupakaya with the enlightened measure of marks, major sign and mark and minor signs, you know. So that seems wonderful. That seems wonderful. By engaging in such practice, that one can achieve such state, you know. But Supriti is concerned what will happen when the Dharma in degeneration time, when Dharma decline. So, and then Buddha understand the fear and the worry of the audience. So he tried to assure them, you know, assuring them not to worry about it, you know. So that's when he said that, and the Venerable Supiti replied to the Bhagwan. Bhagwan, in the future period, at the end of the 500s, so the degeneration times, of course, five, they are different according to different suttas, you know, the time of the degeneration, you know, 500, 2,500 years, you know, 5,000s. 2000s and 2500, 5000 and so on, different suttas, you know. And you know, in according to some of the results, this commentary, you know, they said there is no contradiction in that, you know. At the very beginning, you know, there's really true, lot of really great practitioners, and then slowly it declines. They're still practitioner, but not strong practitioner as before. Slowly, you know, Dharma is still alive. Dharma is still there, but it's not as alive as it used to be. So, you know, at different times. So anyway, so that is 500, just one. When the holy Dharma will totally perish, will any sentient beings produce correct discrimination about the world of sutras, such as this being explained? So he's waiting, would there be anyone, any sentient being who can preserve, who can hold and preserve such as this teachings, such as the Prajnaparamita sutras and teaching that help the sentient being to achieve such awakening state, you know. And to that question, Buddha explained, the Bhagavan says, Subhuti, do not say that what you have said. In the future period, at the time of 500, and when the holy Dharma will totally perish, will any sentient being produce correct discrimination about the word of Sutta, such as this being explained? Moreover, Subhuti, in the future period, at the end of the 500, when the holy Dharma will totally perish, there will be Bodhisattva, Mahasattva, endowed with moral qualities. There will be a Bodhisattva who still have three higher training. So endowed with the higher training of morality, endowed with the qualities, here means endowed with the meditative concentrations, and endowed with the wisdom, the insight. So three high training. Subhuti, those both sattvas, mahasattva, moreover, will not have made homage to just a single Buddhas, you know, but they will not have been produced root of virtues to just one single Buddha. Subhuti, there will be both sattva, mahasattva, who have made homage to many hundred thousands of Buddhas and produced roots of virtues to many hundred thousands of Buddha. So saying that you don't need to worry about it, assuring that there will be Bodhisattvas who have all these qualities, who can preserve those teachings, who can hold those teachings correctly, and that. So Buddhi, and so even though this one is Buddha's is answering to Subhuti, but I think sometimes we might feel that way too, you know. And it's again assurance to us, you know, you don't have to be so fearful and wary, all of that. You know, there will be always the Bodhisattvas out there who have all these qualities to preserve, to hold those teachings correctly, purely, you know. Subhuti, those who will acquire merely single mind of faith upon the word of such sutta as being this being explained, Subhuti, Tathagata knows, you know. And Tathagata, the Buddha, will know those beings, you know, such both sattvas and such beings, you know, totally aware and know that. Subhuti, they are seen by the Tathagatas. Subhuti, all these sentient beings will produce and perfectly collect unfathomable heap of merit. Why is that, Subhuti? Because those Bodhisattva Mahasattva will not engage in discriminating self, will not discriminate in sentient beings, will not discriminate in living beings, will not engage in discriminating a person. So basically, those Bodhisattvas who have all these endowed with those four three higher trainings and all others, such as the practice of six perfections, 10 perfections, and have a strong, unshakable faith to the Dharma, unshakable faith for the Buddhas, you know, and due to that, they will continue to create a lot of merit. And they will continue even more merit because when they engage in those practice, they engage without any grasping by seeing all each of those practices as empty of inherent existence. And because when they engage such practice, they see them as empty, and therefore they don't have any clinging and grasping. And therefore, you know, they accumulate and create even more merit. Subhuti, those Bodhisattva Mahasattva will not engage in discriminating phenomena, nor discriminating non-phenomena. No. Nor will they engage in discrimination, non-discrimination. Why is that, Subhuti? Because if those Bodhisattva Mahasattva engage in discriminating phenomena, and that itself would be of them grasping a self and grasping sentient being, grasping a living beings, you know, grasping a person, because even if they engage in discriminating phenomena as non-existent, that would be of them grasping a self and grasping a sentient beings and grasping a living being and grasping a person. So again, you know, the Bodhisattvas, when they train, again, you know, they will train by seeing, you know, the phenomena not truly existing, you know, not truly existing, at the same time existing conventionally, and by seeing the two, you know, without falling in any of two extremes. If you fall in one of the stream, then, you know, there can be the graspings. But then, you know, that they train without seeing it, by seeing the bold reality. And so, you know, the phenomena not existing inherently, but at the same time existing dialectically. You know, in that way, by seeing the middle way, the right path, by being able to see the right path, the middle way, they don't have any graspings. And they don't fall in any of the extremes. Also, when they have direct realization of emptiness, when Bodhisattvas have direct realization of emptiness, and when they engage into a deep meditation of emptiness, meditative equipoise, in that meditative equipoise, in that mind equipoise, there is no concept of phenomena, non-phenomena, discriminating, non-discriminating. It's free of all those, is free of all these dualistic concepts and the views. And when the Bodhisattvas, the Arya Bodhisattvas, when they are such deep meditations, in a meditative equipoise that's free from all these dualistic view and ideas, then when they come out of that meditative state, when they engage into the world, they still see things, they still hear, they still smell, taste, touch, you know, all of that. So all these objects will again appear to their consciousness. But because of the effect of that meditative equipoise, of non-dualistic meditative equipoise, when the object appear, the object appears as like more like a dream state instead of like real at the moment. At the moment, for us, everything appears so real. Everything you see with your eyes, everything appears so real. Every sound you hear, it appears so real. Everything you smell, it appears so real and true. Everything you taste, everything appears so real and true. Everything that comes in our mind comes as so real and true. But a practitioner who have direct realizations, such as the Arya Bodhisattvas, and when they go in that deep meditation equipoise, and when they come out that deep meditation equipoise, then even though all these objects appear to their conscious, their mind, but they appear more like a dream state instead of real and true. That is the effect of that meditation. For us at the moment, things doesn't appear as a dream state. It appears real, true. So we have to remind ourselves all the time. It's not as real as it appeared to us. It's not truly existing as it appeared to our mind. You know, there's a difference between the appearance and the reality. And therefore, they all are like a dream. So we have to remind ourselves all the time, they are like a dream, you know. They are like an illusion. They are like a dream. They are like a mirage, you know. They are like an echo, and so forth. We have to remind ourselves because object themselves doesn't appear that way. But for those such as those Arya Bodhisattvas who have engaged in that deep meditation, meditative equipoise, when they come, then the object appears that way by the power of the meditations. So then you don't even have to remind yourself they are like dream state because it appears as a dream state. Easy. So that is where I was trying to say that in such meditative state, you know, deep meditative state, then all these concept ideas of dualistic, this is phenomena, this is non-phenomena, this is discriminating, this is non-discriminating, this is dharma, this is non-dharma, all those concept ideas dissolve, and there's no dualistic concept and view in such mind. Why is that further subhuti? Because Bodhisattva should not grasp phenomena, nor grasp non-phenomena, you know. Therefore, thinking of that, the Tathagata said, if by those who know Dharma treat it as like a boat, even the Dharma should be given up, then what need is there to mention non-Dharmas? You know, Dharma is the tools, you know. Dharma is the tools, the method, you know, to achieve something, you know, to help other sentient beings, to achieve your spiritual goal and so forth, you know. And then, you know, when you achieve that, then there's no more required of that. And then it's like a boat. You use the boat to get to some places. Once you are there, you don't have to carry the boat together with you. Its purpose has been served. The purpose to lead you to where your destination and that. In the same way, even in terms of Dharma, you know, at the very beginning in our training, to have realizations, you know, we need concepts. Concept to understand. Concept to use reason and logics, all of that. And through such reasoning logic, which we use with concept, then you have direct realizations. Once you have direct realizations, then there's no more requirement of that. All this concept, reasoning, logic, all this is like the board or the tools or path to have that direct realizations. Therefore, you know, as he said, such as emptiness is beyond concept. The real experience, direct experience of the emptiness is beyond concepts, beyond expressions, cannot be described, beyond script, cannot be described by words, the way you experience directly. You can only explain close to that, but not exactly. How do you describe sweet if you have never experienced sweet? You know? And probably we can explain for someone who has never tasted sweet, what sweet is. It's not bitter, it's not salty, or it's not this and that. And you might have been able to explain a little bit where they can get close, but you cannot explain exactly how it really tastes like. You have to taste it yourself. Similarly, that is the concept of emptiness can be explained to a certain degree with the words and concept that, but you cannot express exactly as one is experiencing directly. And so if such, you know, Dharma tools, Dharma practice, you know, has to be given up. When you reach a certain point, you know, not to talk about the non-dharma, not to mention about the non-dharma. So basically, again, also is learning not to get attached to dharma and non-dharma. You shouldn't be attached to dharma because even that one is something you get later, like the boat, you know, you give up. And as in some, you know, meditation without objects. You use the meditation with object to reach where there is meditation without objects. So you shouldn't get attached to the meditation with the objects. It's helpful, beneficial. You need that. You need to cultivate that. You need to develop all of that. But again, you know, even those, you know, you have to go beyond that. After some time, you have to go beyond that. And so it's something that you need to go beyond that, leave behind. So there's no point of getting attached to it and grasping, clinging to that. Yeah, I think this is very important, you know, because being attached to our own dharma, our spiritual path, there's so much conflict in the world throughout the history and continue to be. Why there is so much conflict? Because everyone's so attached to their view, everyone's so attached to their path. And no one, when someone doesn't agree, when someone criticizes, doesn't agree, we cannot take it. Because you are so attached to it. If you are not attached to it, who cares? Whether you believe it or not, whether you follow it or not, I follow because it suits me. But if it don't suit you, you don't believe, you don't make sense, that is fine. You know? If it doesn't work for you and you criticize, that's fine. It's something that is something to do, but you don't get so upset and angry about that. But when you are very attached to that, then you get upset and angry, disturbed. Your mind is disturbed. You get disturbed, agitated, angry, and then that becomes the source of conflict, quarrel, fight, and war, all of those. Because of attachment to your view, your concept, your path. So yeah, this is something insane, you know, being attached to the Dharma, being attached to the teachers, our teachers, and so forth, you know. And then if someone criticizes our teachers, you get upset, disturbed, agitated. Why? Because you are attached to that. If you are not attached to that, if you don't have grasping attachments, you know, this is not how I see. You feel that way, you see that way. There's nothing I can do about it. That's how you feel it, that's how you see it. I feel differently, I see differently. That's it. You don't feel so upset and angry and disturbed. Sometimes people ask questions, you know, how do we know it's attachments, aspirations, faith, all of that? When someone criticizes and someone does that, how do you feel about it? That can give little ideas, whether it was pure faith or there was some attachment and grasping to that. Whether it's aspirations or there is grasping attached to that, you know. So further, the Bhagavan said to the Venerable Supriti, Supriti, what do you think about this? Does the Dharma that has manifested completely, realized by the Tathagata, unsurprised, perfect, complete enlightenment, exist whatever? Has any Dharma been taught by the Tathagatas? You know? So again, the Dharma, oh. He said that the Venerable Supriti replied to the Bhagavan, as I understand the meaning that was taught by the Bhagavan, the Dharma that has manifested and completely realized by the Tathagata, unsurpassed, perfect, complete enlightenment, does not exist forever. You know, so then again, even though there is due to practicing, actualizing the Dharma, the method to achieve fully awakened state, you know, but there is no Dharma that exists inherently taught by the Buddha. You know, even though there is a Dharma that was taught by the Buddha, relative Dharma taught by a relative Buddha, how to actualize that wisdom within our mind, the actual Dharma, the wisdom realizing emptiness, taught how to actualize that wisdom that can cut the root of all the delusions. And then having actualized that Dharma, then one can achieve fully awakened state. But there is no truly existing Dharma that is taught by truly existing Buddha. The Dharma that has taught by the Tathagata do not exist whatsoever, meaning that do not exist truly or inherently. Why is that? Because any Dharma manifestly and completely realized as taught by the Tathagata is not to be grasped, not to be expressed it, and is not Dharma, nor is non-Dharma, you know, in emptiness, the emptiness of Dharma. The highest Dharma is the emptiness itself, you know, and the wisdom realizing emptiness, that's the highest Dharma. And that kind of emptiness, it cannot be expressed by the word and the concepts. You know, that true Dharma, the emptiness, is not something that can be grasped and expressed by the concept and the words. Therefore, is beyond this dualistic idea and concept of Dharma and non-Dharma. This dualistic view and concept of Dharma and non-Dharma is still concept. It's still concept, you know. And emptiness is beyond the conceptions, beyond the concept, you know, beyond the expression of the Dharma. So this idea of Dharma, non-Dharma, we talk about, is an expression by our words, expression of words, is in our concept. And such true emptiness is free of that. Why is that? Because other beings are differentiated by uncompounded. So uncompounded here is the emptiness, you know. So when you realize that emptiness directly, you know, then there is no more that mind that realizes emptiness directly, non-dualistic mind, that the wisdom that realizes emptiness directly, that's free of dualistic view, in that there is no concept of Dharma, non-Dharma, all of that, free of that. Okay, so we'll have a break.